Hi, I'm Tara, and welcome to Les Do Books. This week, I'm joined by Paula Martinac, author of 5 lesbian fiction books. The latest is Cleo Rising, which is excellent, and I highly recommend you go out and read it, and it is out everywhere from Bywater Books. Welcome, Paula.
Hi, thanks, Tara. Thanks for having me on.
So you're here today to share some of the lesbian historical stories that you highly recommend. But before we jump into your list, I wanted to ask you a little bit about why you write them, because some of your books are historicals. Not necessarily historicals in the sense that we're jumping back like 200 years, but like with Cleo Rising and the Ada Decades, they're very grounded in their periods in the last century. So what is it that draws you to write these stories?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I started my first novel, as you said, the first one was not quite historical. It was called Out of Time, and it had a historical element, and it was it was kind of an homage to lesbian history. And I've been interested in history for a really long time. I'm kind of a history nerd. I was a history major in college. I went to graduate school for history. And for a long time, I thought I was going to be a historian. But first and foremost, I am a fiction writer and have always been since I was very little. But I love everything about history. I love going to historic sites. You know, I'm a nerd. But I also, I love to read historical fiction. And I think the reason I want to write it is because I think not everybody shares my love of history. It's taught really badly in school. And so a lot of people think, oh, history's really dry. It's really boring. I want to read fantasy or sci-fi or something like that. But historical fiction is so great because it is a type of speculative fiction. You have to create a whole world that you don't live in. You have to imagine what it was like and figure out what it was like and what people were doing then and what the world looked like. And for me, lesbian history has been so hidden. LGBTQ history as on a whole has been hidden because, you know, our sexuality was criminalized for such a long time until recent years. So I really want to bring that to light to people, to know that there were people just like us a long time ago. They didn't have our identities. They didn't have the benefit of our laws. They didn't have the benefit of maybe having the same terms that we used for ourselves. But they had our same experiences. They fell in love. They made lives together. Sometimes things went badly for them. Sometimes they created whole lives together, like in the Ada Decades, where I have 2 women who lived together for 50 years, even though they're not allowed to be out. So I'm very taken by that and really have made it kind of my mission. So now I'm just writing historical fiction. And you mentioned that the stuff that I've written has been pretty recent, but I'm actually doing a big stretch right now, and I'm writing a YA historical that takes place in 1850. So that's going to be that's a big deal for me. But yeah, I have stuck pretty close to home and focused on the 50s, and Cleo Rising takes place in the 80s. But I am trying to expand my scope a little bit with the new book.
That's very exciting. What is the new book going to be about? Are you talking about it yet?
I'm still writing it. Well, it's in first draft form, but it's actually a YA book, which is why some of the books I chose for today are YA books, because I've been reading a lot of YA historical. And it takes place in the 1850s in New York, and it takes place in the theater world. And that's really kind of all I'm going to say right now. But yeah, it's been fun for me to do that kind of research and to reach back and to try to imagine what New York looked like in the 1850s, for example. That's pretty cool. And there, you know, for my liking, there's still not enough LGBTQ historical fiction out there. There is some, but lesbian in particular, there's women loving women, there's much less. And I would like to add to that, you know, compared to other genres, I just think it's gotten short shrift with writers. And I just find it so fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Well, in good news, you have 5 recommendations for us.
I do have 5 recommendations. So should I just jump in? The first one that I recommended is technically YA. Several of these are technically YA, but I have to tell you that they're really, really enjoyable for adults too. And the first one is called Silhouette of a Sparrow. It was written by Molly Beth Griflin. It was published in 2013, but I just discovered it last year, and I'm so happy that I did. It was a finalist for a Lammy Award. It also won a big children's literature prize. But honestly, don't be turned off by the fact that it's YA. It's really, really very enjoyable for adults. So I'll just read the synopsis. Growing up in the 1920s, 16-year-old Garnet Richardson watches the birds outside her window, admiring their freedom and beauty. With interest in both ornithology and art, she cuts perfect silhouettes of different bird species from black paper. Her mother doesn't approve of Garnet climbing trees to peer into nests. She has Garnet's life all planned out. After finishing high school, Garnet will marry, have children, and tend to a home. When the polio epidemic strikes too close, Garnet is sent away for the summer to stay with relatives in the lakeside resort town of Excelsior, Minnesota. She finds herself under the supervision of oppressive guardians and her father's wealthy cousin. But an amusement park and roaring dance hall beckon, and her explorations land her where she least expects, enthralled with a beautiful and daring 17-year-old flapper named Isabella. She also finds passion in a job in a millinery shop. Caught between family tradition and her desire for a fuller, more independent life, Garnet must decide whose dreams to follow. So what I loved about this, I loved all the details. She brings so much of the setting to life. There's a fabulous amusement park. The dance hall is just wonderful. The secondary characters are all great. Isabella is her love interest, and she is a young flapper, and she's just a really intriguing character. We have a lot of things going on in this. We have the kind of the lost father theme that we see a lot in books, but it's kind of turned on his head. He hasn't died or disappeared, but he was in World War I and he has shell shock. And he's the one that introduced her to birds and to art and bought her the little scissors that she uses to cut out pictures of birds. So it has this environmentalist subplot, which is really cool too. And at the top of each chapter, there is a bird name. There is a bird, you know, sort of entwined into the chapter. And then there's a little silhouette of that particular bird. So it's just a lovely book. She's such a good writer. It's kind of a romance, but it isn't really a romance. It doesn't. We're not sure if they end up together. They do get together toward the end, but we're not sure how it all works out. It's very sweet and believable. And like I said, it's just very, very atmospheric and really interesting. And I had not seen anything set in rural Minnesota before. So that was really cool too.
I really want to check this one out. This is the risk of doing this show, is that it just adds and adds and adds to my read list.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, this sounds really excellent, though. And I'm glad you went ahead and said that the ending is unclear, because I was kind of wondering. But I think especially if you're reading about a 16 and a 17-year-old, like, that feels good. I don't know. I guess I just have a bit of a hard time believing that teenagers will always be together forever. I know it can happen, but yeah. I like the idea that there's still so much possibility left in their life.
Yeah. And it's, as I said, it does have a romantic element. It has a strong romantic theme going through it, but that's not primarily what it's about. So that's why I think it's unclear at the end. It's not sort of cut and dried romance, but it has more going on that it wants you to think about in terms of Garnet's coming of age and those kinds of things. And what's the place for a girl and a woman at this time period in the 1920s? I just highly recommend it. I was really influenced by it when I started writing my own YA novels. So I just really liked it a lot.
So exciting.
Yeah.
What is your next choice?
Yeah, so my number two choice is Two Wings to Fly Away by Penny Mickleberry, published just last year. She is a fellow Bywater author, and I was just thrilled to read this book because, as I said, I'm writing about the 1850s, and this book takes place in 1856 in Philadelphia. So I'll just read the description. The Fugitive Slave Act was passed by the U.S. Congress in 1850. Abolitionists nicknamed it the Bloodhound Law. In 1856, Philadelphia, runaway slave Jeannie Oliver uses her dress shop as a front for her work with the Underground Railroad. Reluctant heiress Abby Reed, a white woman, runs a rooming house, not just because she hates the life of the idle rich society woman, but because she has no intention of ever marrying a man. When the young daughter of Abby's free black servant is grabbed by rogue slave catchers, an unlikely group of people come together, first out of necessity and then gradually in friendship. And in the case of Abby and Jeannie, something much more. So what I really liked about this book is that you really don't see, in general, you don't see very much historical fiction from the point of view of African-American women. And you really don't see it about African-American lesbians. And the subject matter is so important. And it's the historical setting is just beautiful. She must have done just a phenomenal amount of research to really bring the free Black community of Philadelphia to life. I thought it really stood out.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked Jeannie, the main character. She is such a strong and vibrant character. She dresses in men's clothing so she can move around safely. So as we know that many women in the past did, because it was a man's world, but if they needed to move around in safety, they might do that. There's all kinds of great supporting characters, the community of abolitionists, an ex-Pinkerton agent. I mean, it kind of has it all. It's a little bit of a romance. It's a little bit of a thriller. It kind of has all of that. So I got very, very involved with the setting and the subject matter and just really liked it a lot.
I loved this one too. It was kind of a surprise to me, I think, in a lot of ways. Because when I picked it up, I didn't really know what I was getting into. I knew it was a historical. I knew that it involved the Underground Railroad. But I don't read many historicals. I mean, like you said, there's not that much being published in the lesfic
right.
world. And
right.
since most of my reading is in lesfic, there's not a ton of opportunity.
Right.
And I'd never read Penny Mickleberry before.
Uh-huh.
Although I don't think most of her books are historicals, are they? I think she's mostly a mystery.
I don't think so. I think this may be the first one. Actually, I could be wrong about that, but I think she primarily wrote mystery or has written mystery.
But you can kind of see, I mean, I'm saying this without having read her other books, but you can see how spending that time in mystery really helped ratchet, like she was using all of that to ratchet up the suspense in this book.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I found it so hard to put down, especially when I needed to so I could go to bed.
right,
because I just kept wondering, like, what is happening, what is going on? And yet there were sometimes these flashback scenes which would kind of take you out of the main story, but they were so beautifully done and had such mm-hmm. an immediacy to them that they were perfect for really helping me, anyway. I don't know if you felt this way, but it really helped for me understand who each of these characters were and mm-hmm. why they acted the way they did in the present.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think immediacy is a really good word. I felt that too, that I felt like I was there.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the atmospheric quality of it and just could really see it. And that's so important to me when I'm reading a historical book. Can I see it? Can you, because I didn't live then, you know, I don't know what it looks like. Have you described it well enough that I can see what everybody's doing?
Yeah, I feel like this one would make a really, really excellent film.
Yeah, absolutely.
I hope it gets picked up. The one other thing that I want to just emphasize, because we unfortunately do have a bit of a tendency within the lesfic readership to expect all lesbian fiction to be romance. It has a romantic element. This book mm-hmm. is not a romance, though. It is mm-hmm. a historical. I would even say it's a thriller much more than
yeah.
a romance.
Yeah, yeah.
The threat is there, but please don't expect a romance, because one of my absolute pet peeves is when I see really amazing books getting dinged on Goodreads because it's not a satisfying romance. And it's like, well, it's not a romance.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So, yeah, if you pick this up, please just know what you're getting into. But it's so, so good. It's so
yeah.
well worth your time.
Yeah. I mean, that caveat is true of everything that I picked for today, that they're not, they have romantic elements, but they are not primarily romances. So don't really expect that from any of these books. But that's a really good point to bring up.
Thank you for being an awesome listener and supporting Tilt, the channel that brings you all the podcasts you want to hear. You're listening to Tilt. Find more podcasts on thelesbiantalkshow.com.
The third book I picked is called White Houses, and it's by Amy Bloom. It was published in 2018. And this is a coming to life almost of the great biography of Eleanor Roosevelt by Blanche Weason Cook. But it's a novel about Lorena Hickok and Eleanor Roosevelt. And I'll read the synopsis. Lorena Hickok meets Eleanor Roosevelt in 1932 while reporting on Franklin Roosevelt's first presidential campaign. Having grown up worse than poor in South Dakota and reinvented herself as the most prominent woman reporter in America, Hick, as she's known to her friends and admirers, is not quite instantly charmed by the idealistic patrician Eleanor. But then, as her connection with the future First Lady deepens into intimacy, what begins as a powerful passion matures into a lasting love and a life that Hick never expected to have. She moves into the White House, where her status as first friend is an open secret, as are FDR's own lovers. After she takes a job in the Roosevelt administration, promoting and protecting both Roosevelts, Hick comes to know Franklin not only as a great president, but as a complicated rival and an irresistible friend, capable of changing lives even after his death. Through it all, even as Hick's bond with Eleanor is tested by forces both extraordinary and common, and as she grows as a woman and a writer, she never loses sight of the love of her life. So I love this book. I love, love, love Eleanor Roosevelt in this book. History has painted her as this really dour, old, unattractive, asexual woman. And here she's like a complete sexual being, as she was in Blanche Weeson Cook's biography. And I love that. And it's so moving to see her like that. And then Hick, it's told from the perspective of Lorena Hickok. It's told in the first person, and it's very, very compelling. She has a really compelling backstory of pretty terrible stuff that happened to her as a child in South Dakota. Also about her career and how she became a journalist at a time when that was very unusual for women and rose to the top of her profession. And their coming together is just beautiful. It moves back and forth between. It starts in 1945 when Franklin has died and Eleanor has summoned Hick to her side. And then it goes back and forth in time so that we see how they got together and how that relationship blossomed. This is such a great example of bringing queer history to life, because in the other ones, you know, it's imagined history. It's like made up characters, but we're bringing certain, you know, we're bringing the Underground Railroad to life and things like that, the polio epidemic. But this is bringing real historical people to life. You know, Hick was primarily a lesbian, we think. ER, most likely bisexual. She seems to have had relationships with both men and women. We don't know how they identified or if they had any kind of identification, but this really, I mean, this gets us right there into the middle of their relationship and really brings it to life and brings the time period to life as well. So I can't recommend this enough. And if, you know, if you're an Eleanor Roosevelt fan as I am, you'll absolutely love this book.
Well, as I told you before we started recording, you had shared this list with me beforehand. You sent this to me yesterday, and I was reading through it, and I was reading through your notes about this one, and I immediately went to my public library's website so that I could download the ebook on my Kobo so that I could start reading it, because it just sounds so good. I'm really excited to read this one.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's a really, really great book. So I'll move on to my number four choice is a British one. It's called She Rises by Kate Worsley. Kate Worsley is, her mentor was Sarah Waters. So for Sarah Waters fans, this is a really good choice. And here's the summary of this. It's 1740 and Louise Fletcher, a young dairymaid on an Essex farm, has been warned of the lure of the sea for as long as she can remember. After all, it stole away her father and brother. But when she is offered work in the bustling naval port of Harwich, serving a wealthy captain's daughter, she leaps at the chance to see more of the world. There she meets Rebecca, her haughty but magnetic mistress. Intertwined with Louise's story is that of 15-year-old Luke, who is beaten and press-ganged, sent to sea against his will on the warship Essex in the service of His Majesty's Navy. He must learn fast and choose his friends well if he's to survive the brutal hardships of a sailor's life and its many dangers, both up high in the rigging and in the dark below decks. I can't say any more about it without giving you spoilers. There's not a whole lot to say because you don't want to give this one away. But lesbians and pirates, I mean, what more do you need to know? Mm-hmm. It's really, she did so much research on this, and it is reminiscent of Sarah Waters. It's very atmospheric. It can be very seedy at times. It's almost Dickensian at times. There are lots of twists and turns. There are two separate plot lines that you wonder how these are ever going to go together. And then she brings them together seamlessly at the end. I thought I had guessed what it was that brought them together. And I was delighted to see that I was kind of wrong, and I had gotten part of it, but not the whole thing. So it's a little bit of a mystery. It's a little bit of a romance. It doesn't do anything like impose modern identity or gender identification on these characters. So it just does a beautiful job. And really, if you like pirates, if you like books by Sarah Waters, and you like that kind of, you know, being plunged into the atmosphere of a long ago time, you'll really love this book.
Well, I'm gonna have to get this one too. Like, this is
did I have you with word pirates?
I had scanned through the document, and it's the same as with the first one. I looked and I was like, oh, that sounds all right, but it's the way you're talking about them. I mean, it's partly the pirates thing, I'm not gonna lie. But I don't know. I think it's what you're saying about the bringing the two together. Mm-hmm. I love that sort of a thing. And it's not always done really well, but when it's done beautifully, that's one of my catnips. So yes, I will see if my library has this one too.
I've added to your list. My library had it, so maybe yours will. Okay, and then my last one is called An Impossible Distance to Fall by Miriam McNamara. It was published last year. She also has a lesbian pirate novel, but I liked the other lesbian pirate novel a little bit better, so I put that down. This one takes place in the 1930s, and here's the synopsis. It's 1930, and Bertie's life has crashed along with the stock market. Her father's bank has failed, and worse, he's disappeared along with his Jenny biplane. When Bertie sees a leaflet for a barnstorming circus with a picture of Dad's plane on it, she goes to Coney Island in search of answers. The barnstorming circus has lady pilots, daredevil stuntmen, fire spinners, and wing walkers, and Bertie is instantly enchanted, especially with a girl pilot named June. Bertie doesn't find her father, but after stumbling across clues that suggest he's gone to Chicago, she figures she'll hitch a ride with the traveling circus doing what she does best, putting on a convincing act and insisting on being star of the show. But the overconfidence that made her belle of the ball during her enchanted youth turns out to be far too reckless without the safety net of her charmed childhood, and a couple of impulsive missteps send her and her newfound community spinning into free fall. So I had no idea that I would be so interested in traveling circuses and wing walkers. But I totally was. And mm-hmm. when she actually gets out on the wing of a biplane and starts walking, it's like, oh my God, it's really atmospheric. It's very immersive. The stunts are spectacular. Even if you don't think you would like circuses, this is like a total thrill ride. And what I love about her is that she is so impulsive. That's what the summary talks about, her being impulsive, and she really is. And sometimes you're just going, oh my God, Bertie, don't do it. Just don't do it. And it's really, there's a lot of danger. There's a lot of thrilling stuff. There's a little bit of romance laced through it. Again, this is not a romance, but it does have that romantic element to it, which is really fun. Again, this is technically YA, but it's told in the third person, so it's unusual for YA, which is usually first person. And you forget, you know, you're just, there are lots of adult characters. This totally reads like an adult fiction book. And I loved it and had never really thought about wing walkers or that they even existed. But after this, I wanted to know more.
Now I kind of do too. So I noticed one thing in common, I mean, apart from the fact that these are all historicals, mm-hmm. but there was one thing that you noted for all of them, and it was that they were atmospheric.
Mm-hmm.
And so how crucial is that to you for a historical book versus other types of fiction?
I mean, I like it in any kind of fiction, but I think in historical, it's really important. It's as important as if we, you know, if you're talking about any other kind of genre like sci-fi or fantasy, where you do all this world building. I mean, you have to do world building in historical fiction too. And if the writer doesn't do it right or doesn't plunge you into there, it's hard to get a sense of where you are. Just in the same way, if fantasy is your thing or sci-fi or anything else that's a kind of speculative fiction. So it's really, really important for me. I don't know if all the details are right. I go on Goodreads sometimes and people say, oh, that doesn't sound right for such and such a time. You know, I don't really know. If you spin a good enough story and give me all the details and make it very atmospheric and I'm there with them, you know, if you got some of the details wrong, I don't really care. I'm not going to go check on them, you know, and look them up. But I really want to be plunged into the world, basically.
You actually have one other book, and I kind of love that you did this because we had talked about you talking about five books and you snuck in an extra one. And if anyone has ever heard me on a podcast with Sheena, I am notorious for sneaking other books on. And yesterday, this episode is probably going up in April. So I think the one that I'm about to talk about will have been up for a couple of months already by that point. But yesterday, she and I recorded one where we talked about the books that I reread the most. And I said I was going to do a bonus book. And she said, that's it. We're going to add a drinking game to this episode. Every time a book that's not on this list gets mentioned, you have to take a drink. And by the end of the episode, I was like, oh, no, I might have sent somebody to the hospital with alcohol poisoning. So yeah. I love that you have an extra book for us. What is it?
Yeah, my warning about this one is that I have not read it, but it is next up in my library queue, and I had hoped to read it by this time, but didn't get around to it. Anyway, it's called The Best Bad Things by Katrina Carrasco. It was published 2 years ago. It was a Lammy finalist in bisexual fiction. And what I'm looking forward to this one is, again, the time period, a cross-dressing main character, and what seems to be really thrilling. And do you want me to read the synopsis of this as well? Okay, it is 1887, and Alma Rosales is on the hunt for stolen opium. Trained in espionage by the Pinkerton Detective Agency, but dismissed for bad behavior and a penchant for going undercover as a man, Alma now works for Delphine Beaumont, the seductive mastermind of a West Coast smuggling ring. When product goes missing at their Washington Territory outpost, Alma is tasked with tracking the thief and recovering the drugs. In disguise as the scrappy dock worker, Jack Camp, this should be easy. Once she muscles her way into the local organization, wins the trust of the magnetic local boss and his boys, discovers the turncoat, and keeps them all from uncovering her secrets. All this while sending coded dispatches to the circling Pinkerton agents to keep them from closing in. Alma's enjoying her dangerous game of shifting identities and double crosses as she fights for a promotion and an invitation back into Delphine's bed. But it's getting harder and harder to keep her cover story straight and to know whom to trust. One wrong move and she could be unmasked as a woman, as a traitor, as a spy. So, yeah.
This sounds amazing.
Sounds like a thrill ride to me, right? It's, yeah, that just has so many things that you know, just jump out at me, say Pinkerton Detective Agency to me and I'm there. But, you know, the stolen drugs, the seductive mastermind of the smuggling ring. I mean, there's just so much that I'm looking forward to.
Well, I was listening to you read that and I was like, ooh, stolen opium. Okay, Pinkerton, ooh. But then when you said dismissed for bad behavior.
Yeah, right.
I knew. I have to read this. It sounds incredible. I hope it's so good because if it's not, my heart will be broken because this is one of the greatest blurbs I think I've ever heard.
I know. Right. Right. Yeah. So that's my next one.
That is fantastic. Maybe we should buddy read it.
Yeah. That sounds good.
Paula, where can people find you online if they'd like to connect with you?
Oh, I am everywhere online. I have a website, paulamartinac.com. I'm on Facebook, PJM Author. Twitter is just Paula Martinac. Instagram, I can't even remember what that is. It's P Martinac, I think. So I'm all over the place trying to talk about different things, a lot about books, a lot about writing. And that's about it.
Go pick up her books at the Bywater site while you're at it.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. That is all for this episode. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm Tara, and you've been listening to Les Do Books. You can email me at tara@thelesbianreview.com with your questions or comments. If you're an author who's interested in joining me on the show to talk about the lesfic you love or the trends that have you interested, please let me know. If you've enjoyed this episode, please check out the show notes where you'll find a Patreon link for Tilt or visit patreon.com/thelesbiantalkshow. Our patrons get exclusive content like bonus podcasts that no one else gets access to. To find this and many other great shows, all you need to do is search for Tilt, spelled T-L-T, on iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, or Spotify.